And greed sounds so evil. Like, no one will say, yeah, I'm a greedy person. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm a very greedy person.
I've seen
no one would say that.
I've seen you over a plate of or of some Mexican food.
Yeah, but I bought your food today. I mean, I'm not sharing mine, but I did buy yours.
Did I screw that up? And you can get Listen Up for only $14.99.
So it's Thanksgiving, Matt Russell.
It is.
Happy Thanksgiving.
John Stevens, happy Thanksgiving to you.
You know, one of the things I thought would be nice to talk about, in addition to all the things you're grateful for, is what's your favorite Thanksgiving memory?
Yeah, I think my favorite memory is we'd always go to my aunt and uncle's house, and it would just be our whole family. So it's not like anything wild and crazy. It would just be, and as a family, we laughed a lot. And my grandparents in New Mexico would be in town, and there would just be stories and a ton of food and just us sitting around at the end of the night just telling stories and laughing. And so I think my favorite memories of those, just that
family
time.
Memories, just yeah, getting
yeah,
together.
Just that.
Yeah, and more recent memories, we every year we used to get together with Stephanie's family in North Georgia. Now it's every other year. We have grandkids now because we're old.
You do have grandkids.
We're old and we got grandkids, so we've got to split the holidays. I only get one Christmas and one Thanksgiving every other year. So I just have to take it like, so. But you know, it makes you young again because those Christmases where you don't have kids,
yeah,
you get to have fun. You can do what you want, go on a trip.
That's right.
Do something good.
That's good.
Or just sit at home and do nothing.
Yes.
No, but getting together with our family, that's always fun. We fry turkeys. You
know what?
Borrowed the turkey fryer.
You help me. You help me.
Do you need to borrow the turkey fryer this year?
If you're offering.
Did you get one? Did you not get one?
I have not. But maybe this is the year. Because I.
You've said that for like.
No, I've only done it 2 years. No,
you came and got it for COVID because we filmed a tutorial and I made you sign a release.
You were afraid I was going to kill myself and everybody else. You know what I did? That the year that you taught me how to do that, I got just a pack of like the small small chickens, and I test drove them with the small chickens. Dude, that was legit.
It's very
that
good.
Is a legit way of cooking some
once
meat.
Once you go fried turkey.
No, I mean seriously.
You'll never go back.
No way.
It's just too good.
It's good.
Well, you know, I'm glad I could help out. But if you need to borrow the fried turkey, I don't think we're frying turkeys. If we are, it's not probably till the weekend.
Okay.
So
probably just
no on Thanksgiving Day. We're supposed to go have I think we're having a British Thanksgiving.
Why would you do that?
My son-in-law's mother is going to host us, and she's British. She's from England, so. I don't think they do Thanksgiving in England.
They do not.
So they kind of yeah, but they do like mashed potatoes and peas and stuff. So my daughter's like, "Can you bring all the fried, greasy stuff?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah,
yeah,
we can
we
do
got
that.
You
we
covered.
Can,
we'll Americanize that. This thing."
No, they're plenty American. They'll have all kinds of good stuff. So it'll be fun. It's gathering together. So we'll be around here. But when I was growing up, my grandparents, well, on my dad's side, my Coach and Mama-san, that's what they were called, Coach and Mama-san.
Okay.
And they always had Thanksgiving at their house with our my dad's side of the family. And they would start out mid-morning, and they would pull the cars out from out of the, under the carport. It was kind of open carport, was covered. They would put tables up, and they would buy raw oysters and steamed shrimp, and they would chuck oysters, raw oysters, and we'd stand around the table and then eat. That was phase one.
Was that like New England? Where is that? Who does that?
No. My grandparents, you know, my coach was a retired Army guy.
Okay.
So that was just phase one. No, he smoked, he had a big green egg.
Oh, yeah.
And he smoked this giant 20-pound turkey, which is delicious. And then my grandmother made dressing or stuffing. She did a regular one, and then she did an oyster stuffing.
Whoa.
From the oysters that everybody didn't eat in the garage, I guess. All kinds of great food, home cooking stuff, desserts. Oh. So as a kid growing up, that was like...
Just.
Now, I mean, the first time they ever stuck an oyster in my mouth, I spit it out and stepped on it. Because I love them now.
You do love them now.
But at that point, I didn't even spit it out and step on it because you don't know what it is. But those were childhood memories of, kind of doing family things. I think of Thanksgiving as being with family.
Yeah.
Even if it's just you and someone else, it's usually family members.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. It's going to be a good
It's one. Also a season to be grateful. You know, I mean, you think about all the things you have to be grateful for and, over the past several years, gratitude, being grateful for things, I think takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah, it sure does.
You know, with, just for us in Houston from 2017 and hurricanes and politics and denominational angst and COVID and pandemic and more politics and just add it all in. It's just angst and anxiety. And man, I think what really helps balance and keep you kind of centered is having a spirit of gratitude.
That's right. I think gratitude ends up being a practice. It's I'm sure there's some dispositions that are more want to optimism, but gratitude really is a practice that you cultivate over. It's the way you see the world, right?
Yeah.
It's the glass half empty, half full, you know. And I think folks that are cultivating gratitude are looking at the world and as gift. And saying what is being brought to me that I didn't deserve, that I had no part in playing, and how do I name that off? You know, there's a lot of folks in my life that are in 12-step recovery, and gratitude, they say, is the central practice that keeps people in a new mindset, in a sober mindset, in a way of not relapsing into old behavior. And I think it is, as they say, the superfood of the spirit.
And it has to result in generosity. There has to be some way you act.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's an action. It's cultivated. Yes. It's not just a mindset that, I'm grateful today. Because you can't be grateful without some flowing out.
Yeah.
Right? There's got to be some way of generosity flowing out of you.
Yeah.
Where you're doing something for someone. You're giving someone something. You're donating to something. I mean, right. you're pouring yourself out into someone else. I don't think generosity or I don't think gratitude can exist like siloed.
Yeah. No, it can't. What is this? There's a guy named Edmonds who studies gratitude, and he says at the end of the day that gratitude is the social glue that holds society together. And what you're saying. So if you're seeing the world as, you know, if the glass is half full of what you've been given, even, you know, the small things around you, it makes you want to then not hold on to things, but you realize you've been given so much, I've been given so much, that we can give away so much. You know, it's that flow. We can stand in the flow of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that flow is we receive and we recognize what we received and we can give out of that, that deep sense.
A couple of years back, actually, it was right before COVID, we did a series on enemies of gratitude.
Mm.
And I was just pulling up, refreshing myself from that. Because I think whenever we get into this season of Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, we know we're supposed to be grateful and experience gratitude and think about generosity. But there's so many other things that kind of get in the way.
Right.
Barriers, if we're not careful. And the 4 weeks we did it, the first one was worry can be an enemy of gratitude. And there's, I have in my office, actually someone gave me some Guatemalan worry dolls because I used them as an illustration. I just had the picture of them. And in Guatemala, they're these homemade little tiny dolls that you give to children to put under their pillow. And the idea is, it's an old Mayan cultural thing. And so the children are instructed, and before you go to bed, you tell the doll about all your worries, your sorrows, and your fears. And then you hide the doll under your pillow. And then the child literally sleeps over their worries. And the next morning, either all the worries or sorrows have been taken away by the worry doll, or the doll has given the child the wisdom to deal with the worries.
Yeah.
It's such an ancient cultural practice, but I'm thinking, man, that's how many of us sit at awake at night worrying about our stuff instead of whispering it to something and sticking it on the pillow and sleeping over it?
Right. Which is a practice, I think, about getting that stuff out of you, right? It's about speaking it outside of your, because if it lives inside of me, it becomes like a dumpster fire. You know what I mean? My worries and my anxiousness become a dumpster fire. But if I can speak it out, even to a worry doll or to better you, you know, then I'm sharing that outside of myself. And there's another way forward.
Well, you think about all the modern psychology of sharing that, getting that, like modern therapy, psychotherapy, and counselors.
Yeah.
And here you have an ancient society, the Mayans, that kind of knew you've got to get it out. You got to speak it out.
That's right.
Into something and kind of sleep over it.
Yeah, that's good.
That helps you process it, kind of be over it. And in Philippians 4, Paul says, don't be anxious for anything, which I always think it's great in the Bible. You know, Jesus and Paul said, yeah, don't worry about anything.
Yeah.
Don't be anxious. Like, that's easy for you to say. I mean, you're Jesus. So, I mean, what do you have to worry about? And you're Paul.
I mean, besides death and, you know, being hung upside down on a cross, those things.
Yeah.
You know. But I wonder, though, if the way we hear that is not, there's nothing to worry about, because there is things to worry about. It's that we stand in a larger field of God's grace, right? So my worry makes me very myopic. It takes the wide panoramic kind of God's grace, and it just focuses it down to all the things that are going to go wrong. Hmm. And I think when Paul and Jesus talked about not worrying, they're like, hey, take the backward step so you can see that you're standing in the grace of God, you know, you're standing in a wider field.
What's interesting, when I preached the sermon, you did the word study on the word worry that Paul uses in Philippians. And the word is marimna, which is a root of marizo in the Greek. The word literally means to divide, to separate, or to split apart.
Wow.
And so a part of something that's separated from the whole.
Yeah.
And so that's what the impact of worry and anxiety has in our lives. It's a sense of being fractured, divided from ourselves, from God, from others, to be distracted or scattered, or to be pulled in different directions. And what's interesting is the word that Jesus, when he says, peace be unto you, peace, the word in the Greek is irene. And the word irene at the root literally means one, quiet, rest, to set it oneness again.
That's good.
So you think worry is dividing and scattering you, and peace that God brings is to make one again.
So what if the bridge back from being divided into oneness is gratitude? What if that bridge back to that space of being in the wider field of God's everything is gratitude? What they say about gratitude is that, first of all, it's seeing the goodness that exists in the world. And second about gratitude is it exists outside of yourself. You have to receive it, right? You receive, you realize that the sunset, you did nothing to create. You just receive that. You realize the folks in your life that love you. You don't earn that. You just end up receiving that, right? And so it's not when you get enough money or when this problem is over, you can cultivate it. Actually, I think it's a practice you cultivate in the midst of darkness. That's when you practice that. And that's what comes through.
And you think about one of the big things is like in recent years, like families get together and there tends to be some conversations around politics. And they start to get sideways with one another. Mm. They get fractured and divided and disrupted. Yeah. And what's interesting to me is, like, I know people who they won't, like, their families are broken now over cultural issues of pandemic or vaccines or politics or whatever it is, right?
All the important stuff.
All the major important things. And, like, it's like now they don't talk to each other. They don't meet with one another. They don't have Thanksgiving together anymore. And I think, man, that's that essence of anxiety and worry, is the separation and division and not being able to be one and focus on the bigger things that connect us and to let other people outside of our families now divide us or other things outside of our families divide us it's just sad to me. I say this all the time. It's like, we'd rather be right than reconciled. In our modern culture, it's more important to be right than it is to be reconciled.
Yeah. I wonder if that's because we feel so alone and so afraid, right? If the last thing we have to stand on is our own ego, that's when you realize it's a wrap, right? But if we can be broken open towards each other, and we have to then receive each other in gratitude, then I think that is that begins to restore things.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we had Kitty Harris on here 100 years ago, I think, she talked about resiliency. And for some reason, I still think about that. And they are creating, or there's a lot of research right now that's linking gratitude and resiliency. That hard times are going to come. You can't stop that. You know, a death comes. You have a diagnosis of an illness. A loss of a job. Folks that have been cultivating gratitude on a daily basis are more resilient. There's a deep sense that the worst things are not the last things.
Yeah.
Because they've been practicing that deep sense of seeing the world as good, seeing the things coming to them as something possibly even from the hand of God. There's goodness on this coming their way.
Hmm. You know, so worry is an enemy of gratitude. Greed, of course, is an enemy of gratitude.
Yeah.
You know, when we think there's not enough, so we have to sort of hoard or hold on to,
right?
Because there's not enough for me.
Yeah.
For, you know, that's
there's limited resources.
It's living out of a mindset of scarcity.
Yeah.
It's like there won't be enough for me someday. So I won't share now. I won't give now. And so I think that people have to wrestle with greed. And greed sounds so evil. Like no one will say, yeah, I'm a greedy person. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm a very greedy person. No one would say that.
I've seen you over a plate of some Mexican food.
Yeah, but I bought your food today. I mean, I'm not sharing mine, but I did buy yours.
I should order what you got.
Like that. Oh, that looks good. Dylan, should I order that? Yeah, I mean, So I think when we greed, when we hold on too tightly,
yeah,
that's another enemy. And then another enemy I think we deal with nowadays is entitlement. We talked about that. Mm. There's a story where Jesus talks about the wedding and inviting all these guests to the wedding, and then they're too busy, they can't come. And what you learn when you study kind of the culture of the day is the way it would work is they would send out two invitations. The first invitation was just sort of the whole, you know, not save the date because no date would be included, but it would say, hey, there's going to be a wedding and just be ready. It's coming.
Yeah.
And then the next invitation was, all right, let's come on. Let's start.
Let's go.
That was ancient culture. So this is how it worked. And what happened in this parable is that when the second invitation, the first invitation went out, and everybody's like, oh, sounds great. It's awesome.
Sure, I'll be there.
It's kind of like when I commit to go somewhere. I commit to go to the Christmas party in October, and then December's like, oh, man.
Dear Lord.
I'm not feeling well.
COVID again?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, so then the second invitation comes, and they got all these, you know, things. It's all this stuff. It's like, they're too busy. And so it's a parable reminds us that being part of a community, especially a Christian community, should make a difference in who we are and how we live. You know, at the story goes that even after all the other people didn't come, the host goes out and just invites everybody off the street to come.
Yeah.
Right. And they're probably coming in, they're not dressed right. And then the guy comes in, it's like, he's not dressed for the party. You know the story?
Yeah. Yes.
It's people need to go back and read this. This is a fascinating story. And everybody's like so focused that guy's wearing cutoffs and, you know, flip flops once he gets inside. But what they failed to
do. The Greek, it's Daisy Dukes. Actually.
But the whole point of the story, it's a very complex story, but the whole point of the story is the people who came were so concerned about what he was wearing. What they didn't realize is he was there. He was in the banquet hall. He came when it was time to come. He came, right? Whereas all the other people said they were going to come and they didn't come. But when it was time to show up, he showed up.
Yeah.
And so everybody kind of looked at him and judged him based on what he had. And when I think about entitlement, you know, there were some things we talked about, these traits. It's like when you have this sense of entitlement, it brings an uncompromising attitude. It's I always comes before you. You don't really understand other people's needs in certain social situations. And you're always more interested in your life than you are in other people's lives. What's yours is mine, and what's mine is my own. Self-entitled individuals make unrealistic demands, oblivious that their personal happiness comes at some other's expense.
Yeah.
I love this one. Expectation of privilege is so great in some people's lives that it leaves equality feeling like oppression.
Hmm.
Chew on that for a minute.
That's just the ego strutting around, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's the small ego project that's afraid, like you said, of scarcity. They're not going to be enough.
Sense of superiority, where you are, you're the center. We see that in our culture now, in the United mm-hmm. States of America, is we have a lot of diversity in this country, and some people really embrace that and love it, and some people don't, and it's threatening, mm-hmm. right? And so, I love that it's like when we have too much entitlement, equality begins to feel like oppression.
Yeah.
And so one of the examples we use is like, you overrate your own achievements while, they overrate their own achievements while underrating your achievements. And it's kind of like when somebody cuts you off in the supermarket line, right? You have a justification for the expectation that you should never have to deal with anything that's a disruption to you. In situations where they are forced into taking their turn, they do so dramatically, making sure everyone is aware of the great deed that I just had to endure, this one cutting in front of me. I hope everyone sees that I'm having to deal with here. And then angry people who feel their anger is always just. And then the whole pity party, poor little me. I mean, all those things I think steal gratitude. You know, absolutely. Entitlement, greed, worry. These are all things when you start to get in that self-centered mindset, entitlement mindset, you lose generosity and you lose a spirit of gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, so what are y'all having for Thanksgiving dinner this year? You're not sure you're going to fry a turkey, you said.
Well, you know, the last, what I usually do is there's a buddy of mine named Dan Durant who passed away about, it's been a while now, maybe close to 10 years. And he passed on a recipe of ribs to me. And
okay, so how does he do them?
I can't tell you because I'd have to kill you.
Okay.
But they are the single best food.
I guess the question I'm asking are do you smoke them? Do you grill them? Do you boil them? Do you bake them? Or any of those ingredients? Because people do them a lot of different ways.
Yeah. So I'll do a slow boil with some ingredients in it.
Okay. Secret ingredients, the secret family.
About 2 hours.
And slow boil.
Slow boil.
Like a simmer.
So they,
what
they
Isn't are. Isn't that what a slow boil is?
Yeah. They'll almost simmer. Fall off the bone when you pull them out of the pot.
I mean, and they look white.
Yeah. And then I make a sauce that he taught me how to make. Uh-huh. And then I usually then bag the ribs in the sauce overnight so that they just, you know, you've got this like great. And then I put them on the grill really, really hot so that it caramelizes to the pork. And then I just step back and watch my boys just like,
a lot of those.
Yeah, it's like a gun goes off and you don't want to be in between them and those ribs. So I've been doing that for years. So
that's awesome.
I'll do that again.
The rib king.
And then we raise a rib to Dan Durant, and I met him in Mercy Street days, and he just had a big impact on me. So we do that.
Well, I don't know if we're going to fry a turkey this year. I fry turkeys every year for our family when we gather. And whenever we go do Stephanie's family, that's kind of my role. I fry a couple of turkeys for everybody. And it's sort of a hit, which is kind of a great secret in that it's really no skin off my back. I mean, it's really easy to do. As long as you know what you're doing, it's not that hard.
You can kind of sit outside away from the
fray. Oh, I do. I sit outside away from all the people.
In it?
So, and I'm a social person, but I need my space.
Yeah.
You know, and you can have a little cocktail and you can smoke a little cigar. You sit outside if the weather's perfect. When we were up in the mountains, you know, you sit out there in your chair. It's nice. And then every once in a while, different people come out to visit and see how's it going. And you get to visit. And then it's either too cold or whatever. And they go back inside. And I just sit out there and just enjoy the hell out of that.
That's going
to
be fun.
And then everybody's like, oh, Uncle John's. best, you're the best. Best fried turkey ever.
It takes you about 2 minutes to do it, and you're watching the game.
I mean, it takes some time, but it's not as long as baking a turkey.
No.
You know, you just have to know the right things to do. There's only a couple of rules to follow, and if you follow those rules, you're fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't set yourself on fire is the first one you told me.
If you put the turkey in while it's frozen, you're in heap trouble. Yeah, it's got to be dry, and it can't be frozen.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then it looks like those videos we showed a couple of years ago where it looks like the hydrogen bomb coming out
of
the top.
Right,
right.
You showed me all of those before you handed me that and made me sign the release.
The year he did it, remember, like, on the podcast,
dumb we had
all these videos, all these videos of fried turkey fails, which was like, be careful. Burn your house down. That's not good.
No.
Well, man, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
You too,
and
brother.
I hope, Jeff, you have a great Thanksgiving. What are you doing, Jeff?
I'm going to go to Austin. Family. You're
going to Austin with family. So you're not solo batching it for Thanksgiving?
I'm not.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, let's make sure I'm taking care of you, because you can come to our house.
You just show up
at my house. That's fine. Well, make sure you subscribe and like the podcast. Share it, especially this week for Thanksgiving. This is going to come out. This is a special pop-up, so we're going to get this out on Wednesday, which is going to be the day before Thanksgiving. So this will be a good thing. Like, I really wanted to go for like a two-hour podcast, because I thought this would be a great opportunity for people to say, I'm really busy right now listening to podcasts, so I can't be around you for a little while.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Just so, excuse podcast.
Yeah. So now you can just gather your family around for about, 30, 40 minutes and kind of do this little podcast and talk about gratitude, and you'll be good. So subscribe, like, share with all your family and friends, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, John.
Eat them ribs. Be good.
It's gonna be good.
A little mustard and French fries. Well, I'm John Stevens.
And I'm Matt Russell.
And this is Pod Have Mercy.